Greetings and welcome to the VTC podcast, Voices of Recovery. The VTC, or Veterans Treatment Court, is a treatment-based alternative to the traditional justice system. In lieu of going to prison, where we know that nothing truly changes for a veteran, the VTC aims to address the underlying issues that led veterans to interfacing with the legal system, including mental health, trauma, and addiction. Upon completion of the two-year program, a veteran's charges are dismissed. Well, we are excited to have with us today Dr. Jamie Vaskey. Dr. Vaskey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, of course. Well, we are excited to have you here. You are the VTC researcher, statistician. You do everything with the numbers. You also keep us in line with best practices. You're an incredible asset to the team. So I had to bring you on. As much as, you know, you may not be the biggest fan of the podcast setting, you're still here. So we're grateful for that. So I wanted to take it back. Tell us first a little background, where you work, and then your role on the VTC team.
So I'm a professor at Western Carolina University. Been here since 2009. I got involved with the Veterans Treatment Court in 2015. I had worked with a court up in Ohio, not a specialty court, but in the court sphere, and wanted to get back to the court sphere. So I gladly accepted whenever Judge Pope invited me to be a part of the team and building the project. And now I do all the things that you said I do.
That's right. So you've been with the Buncombe County VTC since it started in 2015. You've been tracking the data. Tell us just your understanding as a criminal justice professor, the traditional justice system. How would you lay that out? Because we're talking about VTC, but traditional justice systems, what kind of outcomes are we looking at?
In terms of, let's talk about the process, then we'll talk about the outcomes. So the process of the criminal justice system is traditionally, you know, you don't talk directly to the judge, you talk with your attorney and they kind of negotiate things. And so it's very much you're talking with your attorney and they're kind of communicating your wishes with the court rather than you speaking directly with the court. It's also very fast. It feels sometimes a little bit impersonal. You know, they're talking about sentencing points and prior charges and all of that. The Veterans Treatment Court and most specialty courts are really individual based and, you know, take a really active interest in the participant. So it feels different than the traditional criminal justice system. In terms of the outcomes, I just sent you the most recent report for our Veterans Treatment Court in the state of North Carolina. Level one and two offenders or individuals who are justice involved on probation, they traditionally recidivate, about 52% of them recidivate. Our most recent report shows that about 15% of all the individuals that come through our court have recidivated. So that's quite a difference, about 35 percentage points between what we traditionally see and then what do we see in our Veterans Treatment Court.
And so you see the numbers day in and day out. But when you think about just the processes here, what stands out to you, maybe not even as a professor, but what you appreciate most about a specialty court process?
Well, I think first and foremost, I really appreciate the team decision making. I really appreciate that there are different individuals from different disciplines coming together to make a decision. It's not kind of the siloed decision making sphere that we traditionally see in the justice system. We have probation, we have treatment, we have the judge, we have people like myself who all have different opinions. Peer support specialists have different ideas on how we can improve public safety, and we come to a decision on how to respond to someone's noncompliance. And I think that's probably the coolest thing, is that we all come from different backgrounds and have a say.
So everyone kind of has a different lens. They're bringing it to a table. And we've talked about on this podcast how the goal is non-punitive. We want to support them with kind of comprehensive care around them, but we are addressing noncompliance immediately. We're responding to their issues of noncompliance and kind of keeping them on track. We're the guardrails, if you will. Yeah. So another thing you shared in this report was this idea of procedural justice. What does that mean? What does procedural justice mean?
So procedural justice says that we really should focus on the processes on how we make our decisions rather, or not rather than the outcomes, but we should really focus on the processes. And that those processes should be transparent. They should be based on objective facts, that we should give people a voice in whom our decisions are impacting. We should have, ask them, okay, so you were noncompliant. Tell me a little bit about that. Kind of get the backstory so we can better craft our responses and craft how we communicate our responses to individuals. We see this not only in specialty courts, but also in law enforcement. North Carolina is redoing their basic law enforcement training, and procedural justice is going to be a core component of that training, because we know in law enforcement and probation and specialty courts, the idea of procedural justice really helps build legitimacy of the system, and it also helps people collaborate to get us where we want to go.
Gotcha. And I would argue the traditional justice system doesn't always place a premium on procedural justice. As you highlighted earlier, it's often the public defender who is navigating the system when an individual is in front of the judge. The district attorney, the prosecutor, the judge doesn't know this human being. It's not all being communicated. It could happen in a back door, and then the outcome is achieved. So this is really involving the individual from day one, letting them know, here are the expectations, here are the supports, and here are also the consequences, potentially, of a action that isn't aligned with, it's noncompliance, really. If they're noncompliant, here's what you can expect.
Yeah. And I think, how are we going to problem solve if we don't know why someone is noncompliant? I think if a client misses a treatment session or a probation meeting or something like that, it's like, okay, well, why did they miss it? Did they have transportation issues? Is this something that we can address? Were they not up on time? Do we need to help them build a schedule? And so it really helps us craft our responses so we make them successful versus just punishing them and hoping that they figure it out, along the way.
Yeah. So that is truly collaborative, and that helps us as staff. It really does. So another important data point that you had in this recent paper was the veterans in the VTC here in Asheville, their perception of procedural justice, their sense of being heard, their sense of being understood by different members of the team. And I wondered if you could talk to us a little bit about our veterans' perception towards probation of procedural justice.
Yeah. So whenever we look at the results for individuals' ratings of how procedurally just our team members are, these questions ask about, how encouraging is your probation officer? How much do you trust your probation officer? How much do you think that they're fighting for your best interest? We see that about 90 to 95% of clients say that they think the probation officer always does this. So that's pretty high levels. Traditionally, individuals who are on probation, may not think that their probation officer is working for them, that they're actually working for the system, or they may not trust their probation officer. I think it's really telling the effects of procedural justice on our clients whenever our clients maybe are noncompliant, when they mess up, whenever they've been using and they still show up. I think that is the outcome of being procedurally just, is that they still engage with the system. We see individuals absconding on probation a lot of times because they're afraid of what's going to happen. They don't trust what their probation officer, isn't going to throw them in jail or isn't going to act in their best interest. And so, by being procedurally just, keeps the person engaged with the process and kind of works through the hard situations and doesn't make it harder for them. So,
great. So, and the data is showing. They're 95% approval that they feel there is this procedural justice in meaningful ways. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. We see that, you know, our individuals, they attend 95% of treatment sessions, 94% of probation sessions. And so, you know, they're showing up. So I think that just speaks to the effects of procedural justice on engagement.
I love that. So talk to us a little bit about your role on the Buncombe County Veterans Treatment Court team when we are in pre-court staffing, because this is kind of unique. We've observed other courts before, and some researchers play more of a hands-off role, right? It's just simply, here are the numbers that we have, and then they generate a report. But I feel like you play kind of a unique role for Buncombe County. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so from a statistical standpoint, we have a small number of individuals on our court. And so publishing off of that, you know, we're not going to be publishing a lot. And so whenever I first came onto the court, I was like, I'm not sure what my role is here. And so over the years, my role has evolved to being more of, I would say, quality improvement or quality assurance manager. So I have a firm understanding of best practices. I have a firm understanding of our policies. So really holding us true to our policies and best practices and helping us navigate the barriers to implementing best practices. How do we get closest to best practices? So my role on the Buncombe County Veterans Treatment Court team and drug treatment look very, very different than my role on other teams. My role on other teams is they send me the data. I maybe attend court, you know, once a year, twice a year, kind of do some observing and then provide them feedback. Whereas on these teams, I am an active participant where I am saying, okay, so last time around, Johnny, you know, was positive for methamphetamines. We gave him a verbal warning. Now, you know, we need to step it up. We can't use the verbal warning because that didn't shape the behavior. It didn't change the behavior. So let's, you know, look at our sanctioning matrix and use graduated sanctions. And what can we do there? And then, okay, treatment. What's the appropriate treatment response? So my role on that team is very, very different than my role on other teams. It's very much about quality assurance and trying to get the best outcomes for community members versus publishing, which is typically the role of the evaluator.
Yeah, that is a different perspective completely. And I think it has been so valuable to us as a program. And with an interdisciplinary team, we don't have, you know, it's not the loudest voice in the room. Ultimately, it's the decision of the judge, but it's all of us contributing from our perspective, be it treatment, probation, law enforcement. We're all putting in the mix and giving this information to the judge so he has the best decision. But also included is structured decision making. And you brought this up a little bit. Can you tell us more about how we as a court use structured decision making?
Well, that is one of my favorite topics, is structured decision making in the criminal justice system. So from 2015 to 2018, I was reporting our sanctioning history and looking at how we were sanctioning individuals. And most of the time when we were sanctioning individuals, we just show up and be like, okay, well, what do we think is a good sanction for Johnny in this third positive drug screen? And unfortunately, what we see and what we saw in those data was unstructured decision-making leads to disparity in outcomes for similarly situated individuals. And so in 2019, I published a paper that looked at how we were responding to noncompliance. And what I found is that for Black individuals, we were more likely to provide a harsher sanction than white individuals who committed a similar offense. And unfortunately, what happens is whenever we do these upward departures, it actually causes individuals to escalate their behavior faster. So we are trying to give them a sanction and we want to stop the behavior, but in effect, we are actually making it worse. So in, I think, 2019, I helped create our structured decision-making matrix, the sanction matrix, based upon best practices as well as the probation matrix, because probation is on our team and, you know, they have to follow their policies. So it was really threading the needle of probation policies plus best practices to get us in line with graduated sanctions. So now we use this sanction matrix. Anytime that an individual, you know, does a certain behavior, we take into account whether it's proximal or distal behavior, what, how many offenses have happened, the highest offense, and it's a menu-based option. So it gives you the ability to stay consistent while providing more individualized responses to behavior, but being consistent across similarly situated individuals.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's amazing how we perceive ourselves to be free of bias. No one wants to, I think we need to be harder on Johnny. Or no, we most often think ourselves fair. We are in this program because we want the best outcomes for our veterans, truly. And there's something that structured decision making, informed also by data and best practices, can bring us to in a way that just us going willy-nilly, hey, I think this is probably what we should do, it can't achieve. And you mentioned, I know there's also abstinence violation effect, where we swing so hard at them that they hit the F it button. Mm-hmm. They say, well, you know what? I messed up clearly and I'm getting punished. Why am I even doing this?
Yeah.
There's no reason at all. And so you truly have brought our program and the programs here in Buncombe to that next level. And I just, yeah, I'm grateful for you as a team member, everything that you bring to the team every day, and seeing how it truly impacts our veterans' lives in a meaningful way. It's extraordinary. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, Dr. Vasky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think graduation is the best day that we have. You know, we see people who have burnt down their lives, you know, to the very bottom. They don't have a house. They don't have a car. They don't have a family. Nobody trusts them anymore. And then at the end, they have their family. They have their job. They have a safe, stable place to live. You know, just normal things that we have. And it's so cool to be a part of that process and to work with a team to get to that outcome. So yeah, it's great.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Vasky, for being with us here today and your continued support of our veterans. And a big thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in. We're honored to have you. So stay tuned next week, where we continue our conversations and hear more about the Voices of Recovery. This is the VTC Podcast, signing off.